the Game Buoy, where we talk about gaming news that's not on your radar, but probably should be. As always, I'm your host, Captain Spike. With me, per usual, is First Mate Slutdick.
How rude!
Okay, I know that I had something I was supposed to say to that, but I can't. No. With me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Ahoy, mateys!
Oh my god, that was super good.
Yeah, that didn't feel so great.
Yeah, so, okay, if it didn't feel good, don't do it again. So, this week we're going to talk to you guys about massively multiplayer online games. You might be thinking that that is about as far from sort of left-of-center news as you could possibly get. And I think you'd be right. But, you know, both Slykick and I, we both play a lot of MMOs. And it's kind of been a big month for MMOs. In fact, I dare say it's been a big year for MMOs. There's been a lot of moving, a lot of shaking, possibly some grooving. And I think there's a lot to talk about that maybe isn't really getting talked about right now. So we're going to try to tackle that. We're going to try to give you some insights from, you know, fanatics of the MMO genre. But first, you know, as always, let's do some follow-up. Slykick, you want to take this first one?
Yeah, one of the things that we wanted to talk about is, you know, we've kind of been following Sega's digital initiative, and we're really excited to see that Jet Set Radio, or Jet Grind Radio, as you may know it, has been announced as being available next month for $9.99, which is equivalent to 800 Microsoft points. PlayStation Plus members get it first, so, like, all five of you who have PlayStation Plus.
I'm one of them, bitch.
Otherwise, PSN gets it September 18th, and the day after, we get it on XBL and Steam's. So, oh, and then Vita gets it in October, because no one care.
Can I say, that is some shit right there.
I'll probably get it for Vita, honestly.
I'll probably triple dip. I'm probably going to buy it on Steam, PS3, and Vita, so basically everywhere but Xbox.
I don't understand why they are not, or is it going to be, I mean, the way that it sounds, though, it's not going to be one of the PSN titles that works on both.
You know, it's not. I'm not quite sure why it's
That's weird.
Sony has been really pushing people toward this. You know, a lot of their games. Now, Sound Shapes was a big one that hit this past week. Great game, by the way.
Yeah, it was super cool.
If you play it on, if you get it on your Vita or PS3, you'll have it on the other console for, you know, no additional charge. It's really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, like, for me, personally, it's not super relevant because I don't use my PS3 because it's hella broken. But, you know, I still think conceptually it's a good idea, so.
Yeah.
Whatever. So I'll probably actually get it on Vita because I think that would be a really cool, game to have.
Yeah, it's really cool. I'll show it to you when we're done recording.
So, also in Sega news, they're going to be making an appearance at PAX up in Seattle, and there is an unannounced digital title that they're going to be showing up there, so there's kind of some mystery involved there.
Yeah, I mean, something else to think about, I don't know if this ties in, but I definitely just want to mention it, is that next week, Shinobi for PS2 is going to be the PS2 Classic download on the PSN network for PlayStation 3.
Cool!
That's actually one of my very favorite games of that generation.
Yeah, that was really popular, as I recall.
And it's sort of the forerunner to this sort of stylish action genre, you know, like a Devil May Cry or a Bayonetta. It's almost like a proto-Devil May Cry. So that's something really exciting. If you haven't played that game, I definitely would recommend you check it out. And that ties in here, because I was going to say, you know, Sega, they're showing this unannounced digital title.
And it's going to be playable. That's the thing. It's not just like, oh, here's a video. It's going to be playable, like, along with Jet Set Radio, Nights into Dreams, PSO2, Sonic Adventure 2, Sonic All-Stars Racing Transform, Danica Patrick Edition, or whatever, and a couple other ones, so.
Yeah, the thing is, that's really exciting about that for me, is that I would have guessed that it would have been PSO or Knights, but it's not either of those games. So, like, what is this going to be? Is it going to be something super awesome?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's really crazy to think that just a couple months ago, you know, Sega looked like it was in really bad shape, and now, like, Jet Set Radio, Nights in the Dreams, Phantasy Star, like, all of these games that people, like, really liked, you know, are kind of making a resurgence. So, actually, it turned out to be a really good thing, so.
Yeah, I mean, I wish they hadn't had to restructure in the first place, but based on the content that we're getting now, and Sega's finally really leveraging their portfolio, it's hard to be too upset.
I'm honestly surprised, I mean, based on what Sega's done in the past. My hope is that it would be some sort of Space Channel 5-related announcement.
And, you know, there's actually some merit there. You know, they just released the, not just anymore, a year or two ago, they did that Dreamcast pack that had Space Channel 5 on it. They did a Space Channel 5 release on Steam. So, it maybe, you know, this is an unannounced game. It could be something new. It could be a new Space Channel game. I don't know that I'm expecting that.
I'm not expecting it, but that would be my fanboyish hope.
Yeah, well, it's not outside of the realm of possibility. I'm personally hoping for a re-release of Shining Force 3. Of course, those of you listening probably are aware, it was an old Saturn game. The third Shining Force game was a Saturn game that was split up into three different scenarios. Not entirely dissimilar to the way Suikoden 3 was structured with its Trinity system. Except for Shining Force 3, only the first scenario came out in English. So to this day, because I've never gotten my hands on import copies of Scenarios 2 or 3, I have no idea how that story ends. So I love those kinds of games. We've talked about that here before. And I'd love to see how the rest of that story goes. So if anyone from Sega is listening, I will buy it for a high price.
Awesome. World Heroes Perfect, which we just talked about on our gay episode, just went up on Virtual Console.
Was that your one?
Maybe. It just went up on Virtual Console, so it was just, it's kind of funny we didn't plan it that way, you know?
Yeah, totally just serendipitous for us. You can now see Rasputin raping dudes.
Yeah, and Captain Spike sent me a video of that, and I lolled IRL, so.
Yeah, we're going to link that.
We're going to link that to you.
We're going
to
link that over on GameBuoy.org.
And we're not going to, like, rickroll you into it and, like, make you think you're watching something that's not gay.
We're going to make sure that you're watching a video that's super gay.
Yeah. Yeah. And this last update, I'm going to need to toss over to you because there's lots of Japanese involved. And every time I try to speak in Japanese, it's fake and racist. So,
you know, I'm not going to read this tweet in Japanese because I you bitch. I actually way prefer the translation I did for you. So I'm just going to read that. Which, basically, Wada-san tweeted after, you know, the Final Fantasy versus 13 rumors that we talked about previously. Wada-san basically tweeted, someone is making shit up, y'all. This game looks sick.
I kind of don't think that that's an authentic Japanese.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that is he very specifically here says in this tweet that he just attended an afternoon meeting on Versus 13 and that our minds will be blown away by the cityscape that they were displaying.
Do you know what I loved?
That I basically just translated it anyway.
Well, yeah, but...
And he does explicitly say, oh, someone was just making up a rumor.
I love that Brian Ashcraft replied in Japanese.
Did, the translation I did of his tweet for you, did you get that here?
No, but it was basically like, well, you didn't...
Oh, I do remember.
You didn't clarify, so...
Ashcraft from Kotaku. basically... had tweeted Wada-san back saying, oh, I got tired of waiting for a response to my inquiries, so we just ran with the story. Way to Kotaku it.
Right.
Can that be a verb? Can you Kotaku something?
I think so.
Is that like Brita-ing?
Probably, it should be. You know what I just thought when you accidentally said Iwata? I think Wada-san and Iwata-san need to, like, collaborate on something. It would probably be really fucking weird.
Wada, Iwata.
Wada, Iwata.
Oh, we're going to hell. So I guess this last follow-up is also a news story.
So actually, should we just kick into
Yeah, I think it's time.
We say that all the segments are our favorite, but...
Because I love this show.
Aww.
News. Oh my god, news.
So, we've previously talked about the Ooyah.
Ooyah!
So, crowdsourcing, or crowdfunding for the Ooyah... I still don't... I'm not quite sure how to pronounce that. I even looked up a pronunciation.
I'm pretty sure it's Ooyah.
Ooyah. So the Ooyah has been successfully funded as of... Was that Thursday?
Yeah, it just happened a day or so ago.
And my understanding is that they ended up at just around $8.5 million.
Yeah, they raised some bank.
So that's more than 50,000 backers.
Yeah, and I mean, if that's not even counting the developers who pledged at some of the higher price points. I actually added it up with the calculator app, and it was about... Well, I must have not written it down, but it was about like 57,000 consoles, not including the developer ones, which would be another 1,000, I think.
It was 56,479. You did write it down, and you emailed it to me.
Oh, well, I'm glad.
This unprepared bitch right here.
Fuck off. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of amazing for something that, like, you know, when we first saw it, I was like, oh, super cool. You know, I pledged right away at the, you know, the entry level. You know, not the $1, but the $99 one. So, you know, the Ooyah with just one controller, not the fancy limited edition or the two controller one or anything like that. And that was actually the most popular one, like... 46,124 of that 5,700-ish pledged at that level, so...
Yeah, well, you know, this tells me that there's, like, there's a real hunger for this sort of fourth console, sort of newcomer, doing things differently, doing things sort of, you know, left of center, and that's sort of, that's our whole thing, is sort of left of center, a little bit out of the mainstream. I get the feeling that there's a real hunger and a real need for this kind of device and this kind of content.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of amazing how, you know, it was kind of uncertain. They were, you know, people were like, you know, well, it's, success is going to depend on what backing they get. And, you know, there's been a lot of, like, iHeartRadio and Vivo is supporting it, but those aren't really relevant to a gaming podcast. But I think the ones that we are excited about are that Namco Bandai... have announced that they're going to be working with Ooyah and Square Enix.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about Square Enix supporting the Ooyah is my understanding is they're going to have a Ooyah-specific build of Final Fantasy III.
Yeah, it's not just going to be the Android port that we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, which actually would have been fine because that's already, you know, a quite serviceable port with some great, you know, resampled textures from the DS original release. But they're actually doing a specific Ooyah version that will have even higher resolution textures that have been further, you know, redone to look good on a HD set.
Yes, and they are going to be offering a free demo. So, I mean, that's really, like, I think Namco, I mean, you know, Namco is, you know, not maybe the monster that was really... in, like, 1982, but...
Namco, you can't really sneeze at Namco, though. Between, you know, Pac-Man and Galaga and Tekken and Ridge Racer and Soul Calibur.
Ridge Racer!
I am... Of that stable, I am probably most into Soul Calibur, and I'm sure there will be no Soul Calibur Ooyah game. I'm not saying there will be, but there's going to be a Pac-Man game. I mean,
oh, certainly.
LBR, I mean... there's going to be a Pac-Man game probably day one.
Yeah,
and maybe some shitty arcade ports of, like, Mappy? I don't know, like...
Cute. But, you know, my point being that, you know, Namco Bandai... I'm more excited for Square Enix, obviously. But, I mean, I still think that's really cool.
Cool!
Yeah, so I'm actually stoked about that. You know, Square Enix has some great... mobile software. They have that the Final Fantasy Dimensions coming out for iOS. I'm hoping that gets an Ouya port. It's basically like a Super Nintendo Final Fantasy game made today.
Maybe some Kingdom Hearts exclusive Ouya content.
I doubt that,
but
it would be interesting to see if they did port the original mobile release of
it. Would be
Coded,
cool. It would be cool to see if they did a lot of mobile releases. That's right.
I really think that's mostly what we're going to see on the Ouya is up-resed releases of currently available mobile content. And I think that's okay. I'd be totally down to play Cannibalt on my TV.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is that we've talked about a little bit about how we've done the Android phone thing, and that it hasn't worked out for either of us. But I appreciate the fact that Android's whole thing is being able to be like hacked and stuff. It's kind of the opposite of what Apple stands for. So I think that's really going to be super cool for a game developer standpoint, and
Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to see a shit ton of indie games.
Yeah, that's practically the point.
That are going to be just, amazing and, just tailored to what the Ouya has to offer. I have to ask, before we move on, what level did you pledge at?
I pledged at the $99 level.
Okay, so because obviously I'm just going to bring my controller over if I'm playing it here. So.
Yeah, and, they already have their website up for pre-orders, so as soon as they have pre-orders for controllers, I'm going to get a second controller. I just, personal stuff notwithstanding, I just couldn't swing any more money than $99.
This isn't actually on our show roll, but I wanted to bring it up because it has to do with Kickstarter and kind of ties into our gay episode last week. There is a GamerCon that is going to be happening in San Francisco, which is also on Kickstarter. We'll link that for you.
That actually put a pin in that. We'll talk about that next episode. But we'll have a link for it up on our website for people that are interested and want to find out more independently before then. But I want to spend maybe 20 minutes talking about why I think that's an important thing to have.
Agreed.
Gay GamerCon, supposed to be August 2013. It's kickstarting right now, and it will still be open to fund by the time you hear our next episode.
Yeah, but if you're just eager to pledge right away, we've both pledged.
Yeah, we've both
we are
pledged.
Attending.
I'm a real believer.
So we'll talk a little more about that next time. I just wanted to get that in there.
I'm glad you did, because you're right. I was planning on getting to it next episode, but people might want to...
And I just jumped the gun.
Yeah, well, people might want to dig in now, and I think that's great. I'm a huge fan of Kickstarter. My opinions have evolved, to put it like Obama. My opinions and viewpoint have evolved since we did our episode on Kickstarter.
Yeah, I remember when we had done that episode, I had not pledged on anything yet, but now I'm like, hell yeah, Kickstarter.
Yeah, I find, I see people, they complain about, oh, it's like pre-ordering, except maybe you're never going to get what you're putting money down on. That is still true.
Plan better.
You do have to do your research, you do have to plan, but... Again, I really believe in putting my money where my mouth is. The content I want, the events I want, the music I want.
And it just feels good. It's like paying it forward.
Yeah, well, these things don't currently exist. But by putting my money out there, by putting, my interest out there, these things are going to exist. And, they're coming to me cheaper than they would come buying them. You look at, in the world of music, you look at that Amanda Palmer record that we're going to be getting digital copies of for like $5 at the $5 support level. Like, that's way cheaper than going to Fry's and buying
CD. It's even way cheaper than buying something off iTunes.
Yeah. Then all of these games, most of these indie games that you kickstart are, you get the game for $10 or $15, and then the Steam version is going to be $20. So you're getting a deal. You're proving to developers and to studios that the content that isn't being made has an audience. To me, I have really...
And I think that's...
I have come out firmly in favor of Kickstarter.
Yeah, and like we talked about on our Kickstarter episode, we don't think it's going to totally revolutionize the gaming world. But I mean, the fact that we're going to have a new console coming out in this generation that's... no one maybe expected before. I mean, that's a pretty big deal.
It might not be exactly a game changer in the context that people were thinking originally, but it definitely has
What I think that you're getting at, maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that, you know, it's not going to totally change, like, Sony's business model or...
Or you could just let me finish. But yeah, no, that is exactly what I was going to say.
Well, then it was a good thing I interrupted.
Truthfully, that is exactly what I was going to say. It's not going to change how the big three approach this business. It's not going to change how Activision is approaching this business. It's not going to change EA. But, you know, for indie developers now, someone has a wild idea of like, hey, I want to make a game, but it'll be too crazy to sell to a big studio. I think Kickstarter is viable for them, and I'm so excited that those kinds of opportunities can exist now. And I can play, you know, stat-based strategy RPGs, and I can get, you know, adventure games about transgender teens coming to terms with their identity, and visual novels that, I mean, heck, English-made visual novels, that alone, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so maybe it will encourage some developers to be like, oh, hey, people will put their money forward and, you know, support these. But if not, you know, they're still getting made. So, you know, either way, it's a positive thing as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and that'll probably be most apparent with the Double Fine adventure. Like, that's gonna change things a little. I think how much money Double Fine drew in is going to show people there's an audience out there for those kinds of adventure.
That was really
kind
of the first big one, you know. That
in on gaming side, yeah.
Right,
definitely.
Right. So GameStop has some news.
Yes, they do.
And you know, it's interesting. When I was mentioning this to you, you were like, yeah, this is nothing new. But well, let's talk about the news, and then you can kind of give the background on what you had explained to me when we first discussed this.
So GameStop, and you've probably heard about this, you know, GameStop is sort of big business. It's as big business as it gets in the industry. They basically came out and said that they want to try to find a way to monetize secondhand digital download games.
And, like, I saw people I know reacting to this, they're like, what? That's crazy.
And the interesting thing to me is that Green Man Gaming, which I believe their website is just greenmangaming.com.
We will put it on gamebuoy.org.
And, you know, I buy stuff from them all the time. I just got Last Remnant for, like, $3.75 from them, Steam redeemable. They've been selling secondhand digital download games for a few years now. I'm not quite sure why they pioneered that or why they started doing it. I know that they're based in Europe, and maybe it has to do with different laws there about, you know, digital licenses. I'm not sure. I'm speculating. But this is not actually an unheard of thing. And the reason why I bring it up is not only were people, like, shocked and surprised that
they're
such a
like,
thing
would, that
would
work?
Be possible, but exactly, they were questioning how it could work. And the truth is, there's already a company doing it out there that a lot of people, I know a lot of people on GAF use Green Man Gaming. I always see threads on GAF about it. I use it personally, as I just said.
And you know, because I had asked you, I'm like, well, has there been a precedent set for this? And you're like, actually, yes. So, I mean, I think that's where a lot of people were like, huh? But, you know, it does work. I honestly don't know the fancy mechanics of how it works, but, you know.
Yeah, frankly, I don't know. I just know that I get my key for cheap. I use it. I'm super happy. I want to buy from them more. They also, and I should say this right now, they have killer pre-order deals on all PC games. Like, I got Darksiders 2 pre-sale from them for, like, $32.
Wow. Like, you know, I think it's kind of interesting, though, because everyone, I'm sure, has been wondering as, you know, we kind of alluded to this with our Digital Distro episode, that, you know, that there are some people out there who are convinced, oh, this is all that there's going to be in the future. We don't necessarily see that in the near future.
But I don't know that we'll see that in our lifetimes. Certainly, I mean, someday, physical media is definitely out the door. I mean, that's, I don't
think
it'll
be like in your brain or whatever, but, you know.
I don't know that that's going to happen.
But, I mean, I'm sure that one of the questions on everyone's mind is that, you know, GameStop's like the only game in town, pretty much. I mean, Best Buy is trying to kind of jump in on the used game market and all that. But, you know, GameStop kind of took a monopoly on everything, and people have been kind of wondering how they were going to adapt to it, and so it looks like
they'll just take their current business model and sort of restructure it around the new fad. Well, not fad, but, you know, the new hotness, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, and now, because, you know, they're already like, oh, you can trade in your used iPad. It's like, why don't you just rename yourself back to Electronics Boutique, really?
Basically.
I miss EB Games.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but is this going to make you any more likely to support GameStop more than you already do?
You know, as I just said, I already have bought secondhand digital games. Certainly, it's probably just as damaging to studios' bottom lines, you know, to not buy these games new. But at the same time, it gets abstracted to the point where it's hard for me as a consumer to justify spending, you know, twice the amount of money I have to for the same content.
Right.
Especially in a world where if I had patience and waited for Steam, I could probably get that game for the same price a year later.
Yeah.
And in that respect, I have to say, when Origins, well, EA, you know, on behalf of Origin, their CEO or public relation head or someone came out and stated that they felt that Steam sales devalued games. At first, I rolled my eyes. I was like, bitch, no. Bitch, no. But, oh, there was my one. I kind of feel now like that may have happened. I look at PC games now, and it's like, if it's not on sale, I'm not buying it. There's no context in which I will pay full price for a PC game anymore.
And I mean, just thinking about it, I think the only time I really go on PC game shopping sprees are Steam sales.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm like, I have like 100 games in my Steam library, so it's like, yeah, I have a hell of PC games, but I probably paid like a fraction of what the value is, so I mean.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, that's definitely true for, I think,
most of us. But as a consumer, I appreciate it, but as far as GameStop specifically is concerned, you know, if there is a deal that I just can't pass up, I may do this, but, you know, I personally don't care for GameStop. I think they're fucking crooks, generally.
Yeah, I'm not a big
I have
fan.
A grudge against them with their whole, you know, because, you know, they got that whole thing going on where the employees can take the games home and rent them, and it's like, whatever, but my fucking copy of Bayonetta, which I got as a gift because my family doesn't know not to shop at GameStop because they're kind of dumb when it comes to gaming, it had, like, hella scratches and stuff on it, and I'm sorry, but that's Bayonetta, and how dare you?
You know, their whole thing about their game rentals or whatever, I don't really care. I think it's inappropriate, but it doesn't really bother me.
I think it's inappropriate, but
once you're looking at a game being damaged, that's a serious fucking problem.
Yeah, and I mean, if it was like, you know, something I didn't care about, like Heavenly Sword or something, it's like, whatever. But, you know, it's fucking Bayonetta.
Yeah.
I might someday have to go get another copy of Bayonetta just so I don't have to, like, keep reloading it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so.
Well, is that the PS3 version of Bayonetta or Xbox?
The one I have?
Yeah.
Is a Xbox one.
Oh, just install it on your hard drive, dude.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But, we would like to hear from you over at our Twitter, GameBuoy Podcast.
GameBuoy Podcast.
What do you think about the GameStop thing? If you think that you would do it, or...
Yeah, do you have any feedback on any of these news stories? Do, you know, you just want to tell us that we're, you know, being annoying and irritating tonight? Whatever you want to say, it's all good.
You know, did you pledge for an Ouya? Blah, 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 blah.
That's something I'm very interested in.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this and you pledged for an Ouya, or very specifically did not, like you made an active choice
not to.
Yeah, exactly.
We would like to know why.
I'd love to know why you did or did not. pledge for Ouya.
Because we'll probably understand as long as you give us a good rationale for it.
Yeah, and I mean, even if we don't understand, it's always interesting to hear opinions and perspectives.
Yeah, and you know, if you did pledge for an Ouya, we'd like to know what level. I mean,
yeah, if you're comfortable telling us what level you pledged at, that would also be interesting data to sort of take apart.
Because we, you know, the one that was overwhelmingly popular was our level, $99, which there was also a limited $95 price point.
Yeah, I did not get on that. Yeah, I wish I had.
Yeah, that went really fast, but yeah. So we would love to hear about what you think about our
news. Oh my god, news.
So, yeah, we're gonna go a little out of order this week, and we're gonna kind of talk about what.
We're gonna talk about.
So, this week I have been playing through Kingdom Hearts 3D. I'm calling it that because I don't want to refer to it by its full name.
Why not?
Because its full name is Dream Drop Distance.
What's wrong with that? I mean, it's another Kingdom Hearts. It's so Kingdom Heartsy.
It is not. It's a step above and beyond. It is not. I think 358 over 2 days is fine. I do not think Dream Drop Distance is fine.
So you think that a fraction over a number of days?
No, because if you understand what it means within the context of the game, that means something.
But Dream Drop Distance doesn't make sense?
No, Dream Drop Distance also makes sense. God damn it. It just sounds super silly.
Yeah, but it's a Kingdom Hearts game. It's got Goofy.
Goofy.
I mean Goofy. You could call it Kingdom Hearts Triple D, but then it sounds like you're talking about a bra size.
Right? Like, what kind of weird fan fiction is this?
Like, Cross My Heart Bra Triple D.
Oh, man. Girl. That is like Aeris and Tifa and Yuffie just jumping around holding hands watching them bounce.
Tifa wouldn't even need any enhancement. I have to ask, did they tone her boobage down for a Kingdom Hearts game? Because I have not really paid attention to that.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
She's like, yeah, I had to get breast reduction surgery at the fairy godmother's.
Bibbidi bobbidi boob.
Bibbidi bobbidi boob.
Oh, anyway, snap. I can't believe I missed that.
Anyway, you enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it was super good. I think it's probably my favorite Kingdom Hearts game of the series so far. And I'm a big Kingdom Hearts fan.
And you do say that about every Kingdom Hearts game, but that just means that every game's getting better.
Well, I get really high on, like, how excited I am about these games.
Well, it's fucking Disney and Final Fantasy.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and Dream Drop Distance has characters and a whole scenario, not just characters, but a whole scenario of the characters from The World Ends With You, which was one of my absolute favorite games of all time.
Yeah, and that's crazy, you know, because there's going to be a bunch of, like, children and whatever who play this, because it's like, Disney! And the fact that this could introduce them to some, you know...
Yeah, super hardcore JRPG musical realness.
Yeah, so,
But a great game, superb soundtrack, all of the Kingdom Hearts games.
And you said you put in over 30 hours, right?
31 hours, yeah.
That's pretty good for a handheld RPG title.
To be fair, the previous Kingdom Hearts game, Birth by Sleep, had a similar playtime. I actually think Birth by Sleep was a little longer. I think that all said and done, that game went about 35 hours for my first playthrough.
I mean, so that's a lot of content, so...
Oh, yeah, these games are packed with content. There's so much to do and see. And Dream Drop Distance sort of had the most interesting combat of the entire series, I felt.
Oh, really? How did it differ?
So it has this new ability called Flow Motion, where you can basically jump off any wall in the game or interact with any environmental object in the game. So, like, if you see a lamppost, you can definitely swing on it and go into, like, a buzzsaw attack. Or if you see, like, any rail in the game, you can definitely grind it to, like,
I bet that was testing grounds for Kingdom Hearts 3.
I'm 100% sure of it. I am literally 100% sure that mechanic and the character swapping mechanic, which a different form of also existed in Birth by Sleep, I am sure that these are gameplay concepts being tested for the next console iteration. One really interesting thing on the previous point is that the end of the game, and I don't want to say too much, I don't want to give any specific plot spoilers, but the end of the game sort of leaves the continuation of the story with more than double the amount of protagonists that the game starts with.
Interesting.
So, either the game is going to scale back and there will, you know, be fewer playable characters, which seems weird, or we're like just about to have hell of playable characters.
Like a Mass Effect 2 to Mass Effect 3 sort of situation.
Oh, man. That is my one complaint about Mass Effect 3. Like, where's Jack right now?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I guess you find out, and she has her scenario, but, like, where's Miranda right now?
And that's you find out, again, but, yeah. You know, like, you might...
But maybe I'd rather play with these bitches that I hella fell in love with.
The only time you'll hear him talk about a woman like that.
Right. So that's what I've been playing lately. Well, what about you?
I kind of feel embarrassed because, I mean, you know, Kingdom Hearts is maybe a little more mainstream than some of the stuff we've talked about, but...
Let me ease the embarrassment off of you. Are you playing Pretty Soldier Sailor Moon?
Was that, like, the Genesis or Super Nintendo one?
Super Nintendo one?
Yeah. I should be. That would be a little more left of center, actually, than what I have been playing, which is...
Oh, so you're playing something super mainstream. Are you playing Call of Duty Blops?
No, I'm not playing Blops.
Okay, well then, it can't be that bad.
I've actually started playing World of Warcraft again, and that's my... What's going on? No, I don't know. I really don't know. Like, I just got the itch to start playing it, and I've been playing, like, pretty much every night. So...
Yeah, are you enjoying it? I know you took a break. Did it recharge your batteries?
It did. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's that the new expansion's coming up, which, you know, we're going to be talking more about this in our MMO discussion. But, you know, I think, you know, because I'm going back, I'm actually picking up a hunter that I had started 4 years ago that I just had put on the back burner, and I'm finally getting him leveled up and having a really great time with that. And I feel like I should be on Horde House right now or something because...
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not going to get into too much detail about what I'm doing in game, but, yes, it's been fun. And I, you know, I've been meaning to get around to some things, like I picked up some of the Persona titles for on PSN. So, you know,
the PSP releases for your Vita.
Correct. And, you know, so that's kind of what I had been planning on. But then I just totally was like, oh yeah. So, you know, I'm still going to...
Well, you better fit Final Fantasy in there somewhere.
Yeah, definitely. You know, so I think it was good that I had that break because now I'm going to make sure I have time, because there was a point where, you know, I had so many other games that were on the waiting list, so...
Yeah, and I think everyone who plays MMOs the way that we do needs to take a break from time to time. You know, since I finished Kingdom Hearts, I've actually been logging into WoW pretty much daily myself.
Yeah, and you were one who was like, I was like, hey, do you want to log on and do something? And you're like, really?
Yeah, but, you know, since getting back into it, I've actually been having a lot of fun.
I'm glad.
Leveling my Ret Pally. And, I mean, I think that's really all I'll talk about that. But if you, if anyone out there ever wants to log in and play with us, just send us a message on Twitter. We're, you know, we have a pretty small guild. I'm sure that you'd fit right in.
Yeah.
Well, with that, I think that this is the perfect time to segue into our discussion about MMOs. And I wanted to start talking, sort of... Oh, I guess we have to do our outro. Hey, yeah, 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 yeah. Hey, yeah, yeah. I say, what's going on? Okay, so, anyway...
You just wanted to hear He-Man being super gay, didn't you?
Like 100% Always. Of the time. So, I wanted to start this discussion out with sort of... What new MMOs are hitting in the last, let's just say, 2.5 months? And I'm going to defer to you on this, because you're sort of the MMO guy.
Well, you know, it's funny because the only other MMO that I have my eye on right now besides WoW is Guild Wars 2, which isn't quite out yet. It's out at the end of the month. I was going to actually, I was actually expecting you to start this conversation because you had started playing a brand new MMO a while back.
You know, that's interesting because you're totally right. In my head, I think of Guild Wars as something that's out because the beta weekend happened. And most of us started characters. You know, they're not wiping characters from that beta weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll probably reroll because I don't like how mine looks or whatever, but...
Yeah, I never reroll. I would honestly rather play with a character I completely hate than replay content. I just cannot.
I only play... See, I only played, like, a couple levels, though.
Yeah, I played for, like, 3 hours. I'm like, girl, my time is worth too much money. So, yeah, but you're right. I'm playing Secret World. And Secret World is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it looks interesting.
It's less like a traditional MMO, and it's almost more like... Because it's very story-based, very puzzle-based, and very, like, Cthulhu, Lovecraftian horrors, and secret Illuminati cabals. It's almost like playing a Silent Hill game online with other people.
Interesting.
And, you know, they completely did away with leveling, so you just get, like, oh, I have a skill point. That means I can buy a new skill. And there's no level. There's no, like, oh, I'm a level 4 warrior.
Are there any, at least, stats on gear, or...?
You know, there is stat on gear, and that's pretty much the only way that progression exists. But resultingly, if you have, like, the quality level 11, just to throw out a random number, because that's how gear is ranked in quality level. If you have the quality level 11 gear, then you have the stats for quality level 11. And that's, you can do quality level 11 content, is my understanding of it.
So they have their own progression sort of system built in. It's just,
yeah,
it's not,
but
like,
it's not...
grinding experience and...
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just interesting because, you know, they're just taking that entire element out of it. Do you think that that's a positive thing?
For my tastes, personally, I hate it. I love micromanaging stats. There is nothing in the world I love more than min-maxing armors. And WoW, when WoW introduced reforging, where you could make subtle changes to the stats on gear that you've won, that was like pure Colombian coke to me. Like, I could not think of anything more desirable than that.
Does it affect your enjoyment of the game, though? The gameplay?
The lack of stats on gear? The lack of intricate stats and micromanagement, for me, definitely lessens my enjoyment of the gameplay part.
Interesting. So do you not plan on continuing to play, or...?
Oh, I'll continue to play because I'm taken by the story. I love that there are puzzles in the game where you'll find an item that's like a business card that has someone's email address, and so you'll have to, like, take their email address and go to a real-life web browser and, like, go to the domain that that email address is from and, like, find out information about this fictitious person biography on their website. Like...
So it's basically like some Carmen Sandiego real.
Yes, it is like Carmen... Yes, it's...
Exactly! Okay. I'm not going to make any more ridiculous comments. Well, I can't promise that, but...
No, I think that that was superb, because it is. It's almost like the gameplay is a survival horror meets Carmen Sandiego game. Like, you have to hunt down clues and use the clues correctly. There was a time where my partner Tim had to write out an algebraic equation to figure something out.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and if you don't know algebra, like, you cannot, you're not going to win. You're not going to guess the password
in
that
instance. Well, that sucks for some people we know.
Right.
Not to be a bitch.
I'm sure you could go online and find spoilers.
Right.
But in-game...
That's super cool. That actually, you know, I was kind of on the fence about it because, you know, I've seen, like, how much it can push system requirements. And, you know, I'm like, you know... I wasn't sure if I wanted to give it a try, but look, hearing that, I don't know, that actually makes me kind of interested.
Yeah, there is nothing else on the market like it right now. Of the upcoming slate of MMOs, and you have, you know, all of these Korean MMOs starting to come over.
Yeah.
Of all of these games, the one that I think has the highest likelihood of achieving success within itself, Like, I would never, I doubt it will ever do WoW numbers, but I'm sure it won't. But I am also sure that it will build a player base, and that that player base is going to stay, because it is such an original product. There's no other experience like it online right now. I can't possibly say enough good things about Secret World. Like, I have not logged in like a week and a half because I've been playing WoW, and I've been playing Kingdom Hearts, but there's no part of me that's even considering canceling my account, because, no, I'm definitely coming back. It's incredible.
So it almost sounds like that although the lack of intricate stat mongering and leveling and that sort of thing does, I mean, maybe not bother you, but, you know.
Well, no, it definitely bothers me, but
maybe because thinking of it in the framework of a traditional MMO.
Oh, yeah, in the... Well,
so
that's
I guess
exactly.
You kind of have to not think of it as that way. It's just that...
That's exactly...
You know, you're paying a monthly fee, but, you know, it's more like...
And they've already added content. You know, they say that they're going to add content monthly, and so far they basically have.
That's cool, because some people say they're going to do that and then totally don't.
I'm looking at Star Wars. I'm looking at DC Universe.
Oh, DC Universe. That one hurt.
Cute game, but really, guys... And yeah, so Secret World, if I sound like I'm taken by it, if I sound like I'm overhyping it, that's because I really believe in that product. I think it's super good. I even just talking about it right now, I kind of wish I were playing it right now.
I might have to figure out a way to get into that.
So I guess Guild Wars, Secret World, those are the big two.
What did you play in your Guild Wars beta? You were like a warrior?
I am a warrior, yeah. I always start off as a warrior. It's like, you know, some people, when they go to Chinese restaurants, they have like a dish that they use to see, like,
as a litmus test?
Exactly. Like, oh, this is the dish that I get at every Chinese restaurant to see, like, judge their general quality. Warrior is my class in MMOs that I
use.
That's
true. You've done it in... That was your first WoW character.
Oh, yeah, it's...
That was your first Final 11 character.
Yep, it was my Final 14
character, which we'll talk about in a minute, sure.
Oh, definitely. It was my Secret Rift. World. It was. My Rift character was also
for beta, let's clarify.
In the beta. I haven't played the full product. Yeah. My Champions Online character was a fist fighter. My... City of Heroes character was a fist fighter. No magic, no projectiles. Even my Secret World character, he is a sword fighter. Like, I've been putting all my skill points into the sword arts.
So that's interesting, because, you know, it's not something that we planned on talking about, but it's interesting that there are certain archetypes that maybe we're drawn to, maybe from our interests outside of the world of gaming, because I know you like samurais and shit like that.
Yeah, basically anyone with the sword.
Gladiators and knights. And see, I love like wizards and magicians, and that's why I was drawn to the Mesmer, which I had a lot of fun with. You know what I mean? Like in World of Warcraft, I play everything. I have one of everything. But generally, if I have a choice, I will go for like a magic caster.
Well, you know, it's interesting to sort of contrast the approach in gear that Guild Wars is taking with Secret World, because I feel like they're taking somewhat similar tacks.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding, and obviously I haven't gotten to the end game of Guild Wars yet, but my understanding is that at each level you'll sort of have your gear that you get at that level, and then that's just the gear you get. And any like anything you get in like a raid or an instance will have the same stats and just a different graphic, so that you're just getting new gear solely for the purpose of like, oh, this looks pretty.
Yeah, because, I mean, from my understanding, Guild Wars has always been kind of more focused on PvP as an endgame thing, rather than, you know...
That's my understanding. And,
which is interesting, and I know a lot of people totally dig that, and, you know, the fact that it doesn't have a subscription fee...
Yeah, well, that's definitely why I'm jumping in. There's no fee. If I don't like the PvP endgame stuff, then, well, I'll
just
have the cool leveling experience.
And you know, it's like, if I want to log on once every month or something, you know, I think we kind of talked about how we've taken breaks from World of Warcraft. I think things like Guild Wars are going to be great for those lulls between patches or whatever.
Oh, yeah. If we've, whatever the equivalent of Dragon Soul is for the next WoW patch,
You need another 18 to 24 months.
Yeah, but, so once we've gotten tired of that, it'll be like, oh, let's pop onto Guild Wars for a little while. And that's, I think that it's great to have something like that to sort of charge your batteries like we were just talking about doing.
Definitely. So, we've talked about, some of the newer and upcoming MMOs that are going to be coming out. We really quickly want to talk about some expansions and new themes happening for current MMOs.
And, you know, we've already danced around the topic with regard to talking about the World of Warcraft Mists of Pandaria.
Yeah, and I think that's been a big impetus for us to get back on.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually really looking forward to that expansion.
So. Yeah, I was at the point where I was like, you know, I'll get it. I was even at the point when I pre-ordered it, because you can pre-order, this time they're doing a digital deluxe, which is great, because I know a lot of people love having the box product, I just like the extra goodies, you know?
See, I'm the exact opposite. I couldn't really care about getting some ugly pet and some ugly mount.
You just want the mouse pad and trading cards.
I want the mouse pad, and I especially want the art book.
Okay, yeah, the art book.
I live and breathe for art books.
Yeah, that's definitely true, but I had to look at it realistically, and think about, you know, the fact that my Wrath of the Lich King and Cataclysm collector sets are just kind of, like, in their boxes, not really doing anything. So
I will say, you're right there, I look at my art books from those collector sets maybe once every couple years. So it's really, I'm going to go digital. I'm not going digital deluxe. Because, again, I think those mounts are super ugly, so I think the mount and pet are ugly.
I'm a mount collector, so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not, and they're ugly.
Yeah, so, I mean, some of the talking points, I mean, you know, we're not trying to make this Horde house, but,
Although I do want to say, if you're out there, you're listening to this, and you have any interest in WoW, I want you to load up we'll put pictures of the mount and the pet on our website.
If you think it's hella fugly.
If you think it's super ugly, just tweet at us. If you think it's super cute, tweet at us too.
I think the pet is pretty ugly, but
that is the ugliest thing I've ever seen.
But the mount's not that bad, and I'm a mount collector.
I think it's that bad.
And, you know, I'm talking about like how I'm a mount collector. The thing, kind of the big talking point, and, you know, like I said, we're not trying to get into a big World of Warcraft
discussion. This is our MMO discussion. It's okay to talk about these things.
Is that they're kind of trying to. One of the problems that WoW has always had in some people's eyes is that, oh, all you can do at max level is raid, which isn't entirely true, but I mean, that's kind of been the MMO paradigm. So they're trying to kind of do a paradigm shift.
They're adding now, Pokemon battles.
They're having Pokemon
pets.
Battles, and at first we were like, okay. But actually, it looks pretty cute.
Yeah, it does. It looks super legit. I'm really excited to do pet battles on my monk.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not. I doubt that I'm going to. It's going to overtake everything else in my playtime. But I think it'll be a cute thing to do. And you know, they're also adding scenarios, which are kind of like scaled down encounters. So not really like.
Aren't they adding like costume gear as rewards for that?
That's actually for the challenge mode dungeon. So it's. The challenge mode dungeons are kind of interesting because it's like almost like a time attack is the best way to put it. You have to you have to try and beat like a gold, silver, and bronze ranks for timing, and your gear is like scaled down to a certain level. So I think it's going to be pretty cool. I intend that.
Yeah, that is exactly my bag. I have to say, stuff like that, like oh, here's a set of gear. This is your item level you're tuned down to. You have 27 minutes and 30 seconds to beat this dungeon, you know, just as an example. And if you beat it, you get cool new costume gear that you can, you know, reforge to or transmogrify to. Go! Like, so, I'm super into that.
And, you know, there's some concern that, you know, because they're saying, like, oh, well, there's going to be point bonuses for, you know, like, upgrading your gear by doing different things like daily quests and, you know, these, probably these scenarios, challenge dungeons. We don't quite know. I've tried to be kind of, actually sheltered to news because I want to kind of be surprised, but, you know, so there's kind of some concern that
my ass messaging you every day. Oh, do you want to talk about this? Sorry.
you know, so there's kind of some concern, and I know this is a concern of yours, that they're kind of trying to, shoehorn you into, doing stuff that you don't necessarily want to do just because it's the most efficient way of earning your point gear or gear points or... They're called Valor Points. I was trying to not be too WoW nerdery, but whatever.
The new system is going to be structured in such a way that you get the most points by doing a little bit of everything. And to me, because I'm all about efficiency and breaking systems and taking advantage of systems, I prefer to find, like, one way to just do one thing fast over and over and, you know, just grind it out.
Well, because you're from that old school of RPGs, JRPGs, and...
Yeah, you know. That's probably true. I think my tastes were definitely defined by what brought me...
I do have to say that, you know, I do understand that, but I think that I'm really hopeful for this expansion because, you know, we kind of had some... You know, Cataclysm was kind of a rough expansion. Firelands Raid was pretty much total crap, honestly.
Overall, that was a letdown. I'm super excited for the new expansion. I have to agree with you. I thought, ultimately, Cataclysm was a flop expansion. And especially, like, I look at Firelands... That had some of the worst designed encounters I've seen in my entire life.
Yeah, and I know Dragon Soul Raid is not... perfect, but, you know, I think that it was definitely a step in the right direction.
Let me say something. I want to say something right now. To anyone out there who might be ever listen to this, who ever has a choice in how design of an MMO goes, if you have a single raid encounter that can be ruined by luck, you have failed at design.
Yeah, and I think the telling fact was that our guild tried to go into Firelands. We were only ever able to get one boss.
At the time, especially, we were definitely capable.
We were definitely geared. We had the, you know.
But because of matters of luck and...
And just the way that the fights were designed were just ridiculous.
Yeah, it wasn't fun, and it was, like, there were definitely mechanics that needed to be explained to you outside of the game. That's another thing.
Lord Ryloth, ugh.
Mechanics should not need to be explained to you from out of the game.
And, you know, I think that's, you know, they actually kind of made a step in the positive direction. They have their little raid journal, encounter journal.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, you know, what I was saying is that, you know, we only got one boss down in Firelands ever. We still haven't even gone back because some of those fights are just dreadful.
I would prefer to never see that content again for the rest of my life.
Now, the interesting thing, that's why progression in the new expansion I think is going to be interesting because... with Dragon Soul, the final raid for this WoW expansion,
the current expansion,
which is almost over. They had Looking for Raid that they introduced, which is just, you know, pulls you with random people from realms all over the, you know, North America region. And, you know, there's a lot, you know, like any random group in WoW, you know, that's, you might end up with a bunch of crappy people or people with bad attitudes. But the fact is that it's a stepping stone to the real thing. So I think that combined with the fact that some of those fights are much better designed, we were able to go in, you know, having a little of that background, and we got three bosses down. So, you know, I mean, I just think that...
And half of our best players weren't even there, so...
Yeah, Captain Spike was held up at work that night. And he still kind of holds a grudge against it.
Well, of course I do. But, you know, that's fine.
So I think the point...
One thing I want to say...
Point being...
another comment I want to make on design in MMOs with regard to Looking for Raid. If you have a tool like Looking for Raid that is designed to let your lowest character, your least able players to see raid content, I think that is an awesome thing. But... somewhat counterintuitive, I think it's best to also design one or two bosses that can't be seen through that method of playing.
I agree. I mean, and they've done that with heroic modes before.
And I think they need to integrate that
in. I wholeheartedly agree. I think it's kind of a motivation to...
Exactly. A lot of people, rather than using the Looking for a Raid tool as a stepping stone into full-fledged raiding...
I've got good Looking for Raid gear. I'm done. I'm content.
Well, exactly.
And that's so cool for those people, but...
Give an extra carrot. Maybe not the ultimate boss of the expansion or the patch. You know, let the Looking for Raid people see the storyline ending for people who care. But give them an extra boss that is maybe a slight step increase in difficulty as a goal.
You know, there was like an extra boss in Alduar in the Lich King expansion. There was an extra boss.
Algolon,
yes. And there's an extra boss in Heroic. One of the Heroic entry level raids. It was either Bastion of Twilight or Black Rock Descent or Blackwing Descent or whatever. It's been so long, but
I know whom you're talking about.
There's an extra dragon boss in that heroic version of that raid.
Yeah.
So I actually agree that would be a great
just a little something extra incentive, so that people have content to strive to see.
So yeah, we don't want to spend too much more time talking about World of Warcraft. So again, we're going to mention them in our shoutouts, but you know, Horde House is
If you're looking for a discussion on World of Warcraft, I can guide you to no better place than the best little Horde House in Azeroth, Horde House for short. And of course, we'll shout them out and link to them on our website.
Yes, at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
So there's another MMO that has I don't know if I would count it as a
You know, it has expansion. Its own subtitle, so I think it might count.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Does it?
We're talking, of course, about Final Fantasy XIV... A Realm Reborn.
Fitting name. Now, I'll toss it off to you in a minute, because you're the one here who really has more experience with 14. I tried 11 a couple years ago. You also have a lot of 11 experience, a lot of love for 11.
I love 11.
I tried 11 a couple years ago, didn't really get into it, but, you know, I gave 14 a chance. It basically broke my old gaming laptop. Now, honestly, I don't think that was the sole reason, but, you know. So there was a stroke of unfortunate luck.
Oh, that's one good thing. You have a different laptop now.
I do. And, so, you know, my Final Fantasy XIV time was tragically cut short. And, you know, I could see people's criticism with it.
Yeah, well, people had a lot of criticism with 14 initially. It was very unintuitive, and it was it was intuitive with regard to its core, like questing, or I'm sorry, leaves,
right?
You know, but all of the sort of character customization, all of the classes, all of the level, like this stuff was super esoteric and not well explained within the context of the game. My understanding, obviously, I haven't played the new game yet. My understanding is that this is all laid out way better, it's all way more user-friendly, they totally redesigned even the control scheme to be more traditional point-and-click, sort of almost like a WoW-style interface, rather than a sort of very Japanese PlayStation controller-style interface.
And, you know, honestly, I know you'll disagree, but that was one of the things that was difficult, that made 11 difficult for me to get into.
I wouldn't disagree, because that was the experience you had. It wasn't a problem for me.
I also had a problem as a level 1 character killing a level 1 bat, so I must have been doing something wrong in
Final
Fantasy
11.
That might
just be you being jank, to be honest, because
I was playing a warrior, so maybe I should have played, like, a mage.
Not just monk. No, I'm all about the monk in Final Fantasy 11. That's my favorite job.
Excellent. Now, are they adding new jobs?
They're recontextualizing the already existent jobs, so that rather than being, like, my understanding is that it follows the already existing job system, except now they're all labeled just as Final Fantasy-style jobs.
Instead of, like, Elementalist, or I don't even remember.
Yeah, so, you know, you would...
You got your Black Mage, White Mage.
Yeah, you know, Dragoon, what have you.
Excellent.
And I'm stoked for that.
I will probably resub. You know, I don't think I ever actually had to pay a subscription fee, because when I jumped in, that's when there was all the drama, and you know, they were saying, you know, well, you're not going to have to pay for a while, and then
yeah, that happened to me as well. So,
you know, it's interesting that they're rewarding people who and you know, this often happens when there's huge changes. You know, DC Universe, I think, kind of had some rewards for people who had been subbing.
Yeah, pretty much all of the MMOs that have gone free-to-play or are going free-to-play have really rewarded customers.
For now, customer loyalty, which is exactly. Actually, before we move on...
14 is not... Well, I still have a couple things to say about 14.
I was just going to say one thing, that I won't go into a huge discussion about this, but customer loyalty is one thing that World of Warcraft player base kind of complains about. They're like, you know, some of us have been playing for 7 years nonstop. Give us, you know, even if it's just like a special pet, and you know, they do like the anniversary things, but you know, they want something more.
And you know, I appreciate that because I'm one of those people. I was in vanilla. I've been playing off and on for, you know, 7 years now.
Yeah, come on, 8.
Yeah. Oh God. So. Certainly I'd like something.
Look at your life, look at your choices.
Basically, right. That's the thing. I just got horrified.
That's like the tagline for our MMO discussion. Look at your life, look at your
choices. I would like a reward, but at the same time, I appreciate that they're not just giving free.
You know what the reward is for WoW? A game that, despite having some walls occasionally, is still fun to play.
Yeah, I definitely think that that's true.
Look at the subscription numbers.
It's overall well designed. You know, I would not use numbers in that context, though.
I'm just saying that
because honestly, I'm not going to say that Justin Bieber is like the best musician. But if you look at the subscription numbers,
what I'm saying is that even though they've lost player, there are still a lot of people devoted to that game.
Oh yeah, I mean,
I guess you're kind of that is kind of a Justin Bieber argument, but you know.
It's at the same time, there's clearly something there, and that is unfortunately probably true with Justin Bieber also. I wouldn't know, but in theory, there's probably something there.
Okay, his lead single, Boyfriend.
We're done. You're not talking about that.
Actually kind of has some Justin Timberlake promise.
Okay, so one of the cool things about Final Fantasy XIV, O Realm Reborn, is that they totally redid the graphics engine to look even better than it already looked.
Could leave it to Square Enix to just make stuff look pretty.
Yeah,
that's and I don't mean that in a demeaning way. Like that's, I mean that as a compliment.
I mean they're making sweeping systems changes. They totally redid the UI. The one thing about 14 that was already super legit was that it was already super good looking.
It was gorgeous.
And like now they're like, oh yeah, it has a new graphics engine too, so it's gonna look way better. Really, bitch.
Oh, Squeenix.
So. I'm super interested in seeing that. There were two really amazing trailers put up in the last month for that game. We'll put them both on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
You can see some Magitek armor from Final Fantasy VI in one of the shots. So, if that's like a mount, if I can get fucking Magitek armor for my character, I will buy a lifetime subscription. I don't know that one exists.
Yeah, but I was going to say...
But I don't know. I mean, I'll just pay every month for the rest of my life.
Can you imagine getting a lifetime subscription to, like, DC Universe Online or something and being like, oh, well, there was $300 I could have spent better elsewhere.
Because they sold those, didn't they?
I think they did. You know, it's just kind of...
That would be the worst thing I can possibly imagine.
Yeah, and you know...
not literally.
DC Universe Online was one of those MMOs that... It was cute. I wouldn't say it was a great MMO, but I didn't mind subscribing to it for a little bit. And then it went free to play, and I don't know, and it wasn't like, oh, now the Care Bear kids are playing or whatever. I just, like, I didn't care anymore, you know? And, you know, I tried out, because, I mean, like, Lord of the Rings has gone free to play, and they've actually been pretty successful with it, but... Lord of the Rings, I thought, was pretty basic. And City of Heroes went free-to-play, didn't it?
Yes,
Champions
they did.
Went free-to-play. I mean, so many of these going free-to-play, but perhaps the biggest right now that is the biggest news is Star Wars The Old Republic.
Yeah, and I just want to touch base... DC Universe Online did have a lifetime subscription option that costs $200.
I did not buy that. I was a subscriber. I did get it. I did get it at launch.
Yeah, me too.
But, that said, you know.
I liked the game. I'd play it again. It was like Final Fight in 3D with stats.
Yeah, it was more of a beat-em-up, and that was kind of clever, but... you know.
But I had no interest in paying a subscription fee, and now I've just moved on to bigger, better things.
And then, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you're not paying for the time anymore, and, you know, so... there are better things worth your time.
Yeah. Anyway, you had moved on to our next topic, and this is sort of was meant to be the meat of this discussion.
Exactly, because, you know, last winter, Old Republic launched.
And
pretty successful.
It was pretty, it had a pretty successful launch, and, you know, we ranted and raved about that game on this podcast.
Well, the precursor, the Geeks for Fans editions.
Oh, did we not? I thought that was the first episode of...
No, that was still back, that was before Game Buoy was born.
Oh, just when we were guesting on someone else's stream, okay.
Yes, yes, before we built the new ship. So, we were having a great time. We're not even playing World of Warcraft that much.
Yeah, yeah.
I was playing both sides. I was playing, Republic and Empire.
Only time you'll ever say that.
Right? And, you know, really loved the,
Trooper?
The Bounty Hunter.
Bounty Hunter.
Fucking loved Bounty Hunter. Like, really got into my character. That was what basically was responsible for me finally getting around to Mass Effect. Because I was like, wow, I finally see what everyone says about BioWare. So, you know, not a perfect game. It was, you know, there were some things that I thought should have been in there, like more UI customization and that sort of thing. But, you know, a pretty solid game. I had fun. And they just announced that they're going to a kind of a freemium model, like...
Was similar to DC Universe Online, a lot of these Korean MMOs, where the basic game package is free. You download the client, you can play the basic content free, and then if you want, you know, some items for pay, you can get them. If you want more bag space, you can pay for that. Something really interesting to me about... I just totally blanked on the name. The Old Republic. Something really interesting to me about the Old Republic is that you have to pay money to get into the end game raids.
Which kind of is janky, but honestly, the thing I enjoyed most was doing, like, you know, like, four-player content and progressing my character story, so... That's cool that I'll get a chance to go through my story.
Yeah. Oh, I'm definitely, you know, I actually uninstalled that game just because I sort of lost interest in... I felt like I wasn't getting enough out of it for my subscription
fee. Well, you can get your Origin client loaded up and get that back going.
But yeah, now that it's going to be free to play, I'll definitely re-download it and just play it at my leisure the same way that I'm planning on playing Guild Wars.
You know, and it's interesting because most things that go free to play, like I talked about... DC Universe, City of Heroes, and Lord of the Rings Online. Just kind of like not much there. D&D Online did the same thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that game worked for Turbine very well.
Yeah, and I mean, Turbine also did Lord of the Rings Online,
right? Oh, I suppose
right?
so. Both right, of those so games now are better regarded as free-to-play games that have now been polished.
But the thing is, you know, not really, they didn't really hold my interest. I do, you know, I may not play Old Republic that much, but I will definitely log back on.
Now, I have a somewhat interesting design question I want your opinion on. Do you think it will be detrimental to the development of additional raid tiers, or what we think, whatever the in-game analog for them is to raid tiers, that's gated content with a paid entry gate?
Yeah, you know, I don't know, that's interesting, because one of the things that... was a big complaint, because one of our good friends was still subbing for a while after we had both canceled our subscriptions, and...
Yeah, well, I mean, after she stopped playing WoW, she had no other choice.
Anyway, one of her complaints was that, you know, she actually ended up going into the endgame raids, they call them, not flashpoints, they're called...
Operations.
Operations, thank you. And she's like, you know, they were cool, but then there was just nothing to do. Which I guess is kind of, like, the WoW problem. But, I mean, for the Old Republic, it just seemed, like, really to turn people off.
Well, and my problem is, if people have to pay to play that content in particular, so they get their character to max level and then they can't raid, like, if you don't know if raiding is fun in this game, why are you going to pay to raid? But if nobody is paying to raid, why are they going to make more raids? Like, I feel, I'm worried that it's going to be like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
That's going to end with people just not raiding in that game, and then there's not going to be any endgame content.
And I think one of the things that's significant, because, you know, like, there's been a lot of MMOs that went the freemium route, and, you know, I mean, it's, we kind of saw it coming for a lot of them, but CNN Money actually ran a an article called "Why a $150 million Star Wars game is going free?" Because I mean, you have to remember that game had a lot of money invested in it. So I think
$150 million,
right? And you know, so there was a lot of money poured into it, and you know, and of course it's CNN, so they say, "Oh, it's the Zynga model." It's like, no, it's not quite. I mean, I see where they're going with that. And, you know, because, you know, you're paying for content, just like you might in Farmville to get Farmville Zynga coins or whatever. But, you know, so for EA and BioWare to kind of say, you know, well, we admit that, you know, we poured money into this game and it wasn't working as a subscription model. They said that 40% were turned off by the monthly subscription, and that they would come back if there was free-to-play. So, you know, and this article just kind of talks about, you know, that WoW is one of the only exceptions. They say the one notable absence from the free-to-play thing, you know, because they talk about EverQuest, Ion, Lord of the Rings Online, D&D Online, Guild Wars. Well, Guild Wars was designed that way, though. So, I mean,
yeah.
I wouldn't say that that was something that's...
Yeah, I would not call that...
So, I mean, you know, it's a CNN article, so it's kind of more from a business perspective, which is understandable, but, you know, that kind of raises the question, you know, is it just a matter of... is it just a matter of the fact that people don't want to pay? Or is it a matter of design? Is it a matter of lack of content?
Yeah, you know, it's a complex question, really.
And, you know, something else that this CNN article, which we will link on in GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
They say that saturation is a very big problem in the MMO market.
Well, I think that that's probably true, you know, in this article, and we'll link this article, you know, as we always do and always say, they talk about how a lot of hardcore players are often reluctant to play more than one MMO at a time. I definitely don't believe that's true, but I am definitely only going to pay for one or two MMOs at a time.
Right, and you know, that's why, that's kind of been my experience. I keep going back to World of Warcraft. I flirt with other ones, but, you know, and I think...
Yeah, I perpetually have a Warcraft subscription, and typically I have one other
play. Dip into something else.
Yeah. Right now, that's Secret World. Once Final Fantasy Realm Reborn hits, I'll have to reevaluate where I'm at on Secret World, but, right, like, I don't want to give up Secret World, so maybe I'll just have three, and that kind of sucks.
But, I mean, I think that's kind of significant that... there would be three MMOs worth paying for, because there's kind of this phenomenon of, you know, you don't want to pay for too many of them.
Yeah, yeah. And within that context, I also think it's interesting that there are potentially three MMOs worth paying for, like, where the quality of the content is so good that it's like, okay, I don't normally right. pay for this much,
although,
but
you know,
I will.
I'm not trying to be a pessimist Patty.
Yeah, but, I am counting chickens before they hatch on that Final Fantasy thing.
Well, I was actually going to say, you know, I'm not trying to be a pessimist Patty, but Secret World might end up going free-to-play someday, so...
Maybe. You know, Age of Conan was done by Funcom, the same company that did...
And people... Age of Conan was a pretty well-respected game.
Yeah,
right?
But it went... I'm pretty sure it went free-to-play, or freemium.
Right, right. It did. And, you know... we're talking about design, and that's actually what this the CNN article talks about, that, you know, they were talking to someone from Turbine, Fernando Pais, who is executive producer of D&D Online, said, you know, there's a peril in designing it wrong. If you're pressuring them too much to spend, you can turn the player off from the whole experience. And, you know, I think generally that freemium has done it all right. I mean, Zynga is ridiculous with it, but
well, and
that's not what we're talking
some
about.
Some of
here.
These Korean MMOs, I think they're definitely right. I used to play MapleStory before it was really such a focus on freemium
right.
content. And now the way the cash shop in that game works, I wouldn't touch it with someone else's 10-foot pole.
Right. You know, the thing about that's interesting about the saturation point, though, is that Old Republic was kind of... People were drawn to it, first of all, because it was Star Wars. Star Wars Galaxies had already said it was going to shut down.
Yep.
And, you know, the only other really space MMO, Star Trek Online had... Has Star Trek Online already gone free-to-play?
Yes.
So, I mean, Star Trek Online kind of had, you know...
It was a great game, too. I need to go back to that.
That had not been as successful as they had hoped. Who designed that? Who developed that?
That was Sony.
Was that Sony?
Yeah, that was Sony Computer... Or not Computer Entertainment. Sony Online Entertainment.
Okay, so, you know...
SOE.
SOE, yeah. But, you know... The only other one I can really think of that's significant and that people still are dedicated to is EVE Online.
Oh, I love EVE.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds very daunting to me, but I'm still very curious to check out EVE. But the point is that, you know, for kind of like a space battle MMO, that kind of seemed like, you know, there was room in the market for that. So, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of unfortunate that, because, you know, I'm very fond of BioWare. So I'm kind of sad to see that they've kind of had taken a hit with this. But, you know, hopefully it'll work out well for them. And, you know, it's just, it's kind of interesting because, you know, they're talking about that this is like the trend, kind of the trend now, and that, you know, subscriptions, I don't think they're saying that subscriptions are necessarily going to the wayside, but, you know, that's... More often than not, that freemium models are what people respond to, and, you know, that kind of makes you wonder about the future of where the genre is headed, the MMO genre in general. Because I've heard some rumors about Titan, which is the upcoming Blizzard project that's super, super top secret right now, but some people are like, oh, it's going to be more akin to being like a Facebook game, and I'm like, oh, do not want. But, you know, I think I've said pretty much all I need to say about MMOs tonight. Do you have anything to,
Well, you know, it's worth looking at. I mean, we've talked about all of these MMOs, but there are so many still on their way to coming out. There's Titan, which you mentioned.
Right.
There's this...
Which we really don't know anything about.
No, I mean, we know that it exists.
Some people think it might be a shooter of some sort. There's just so many rumors floating around.
But there's another EverQuest game coming.
There is?
Yeah, like, EverQuest Next.
Oh, wow.
Which is currently in development.
There's the Elder Scrolls.
Well, that was the next one I was going to mention, yeah.
Which kind of, I hear a lot of people think it's going to be pretty janky.
I am not, I don't think it's going to go super well.
There's the
Lineage.
There is a Lineage, that's right. And I was actually, when we've been talking about DC Universe Online, I've been thinking about the Marvel.
Yeah, although that's actually going to be less MMO and more of almost like a Diablo-style game.
Which is super cool, and that's free-to-play. Is it browser-based?
I don't believe it's browser-based, and it is going to have freemium elements.
Do you know what is browser-based?
What's
that? Game of Thrones MMO.
Oh,
which
gosh.
Looks terrible.
That sounds dreadful.
Game of...
Although, the Shadowrun MMO that they're trying to kickstart right now... which I'm definitely a backer for. That is also browser-based, but watching the videos for it, it looks really advanced. Like, I didn't know that browser-based gaming had gotten that complex.
I know you kind of forget about what it's capable of, but, you know, just something interesting about Game of Thrones. They got this MMO coming out. They had the strategy game and
the RPG
that came out a while ago. Is that all... Well, the two that are out are both terrible games.
Yeah, they're both fucking horrible.
And this MMO looks pretty... doesn't look pretty hopeful either. Is that Game of Thrones, great book series, amazing show, but no fucking good video games.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because there's a really great total conversion mod for Crusader Kings 2, which I actually downloaded off Steam and then I got the mod... It's basically everything that you would want from a Game of Thrones video game. Like, you can marry your children off for political alliances, and all of the strategy is done sort of zoomed out, so it's more political rather than, like, moving these units to there.
Right.
It's actually, it's really good, really in the spirit of the books. If I had known we were going to take this conversation there, I would have prepared a little more information on that, because I have it, and it's really good.
That's cool, and, you know, I think that video game adaptation is going to be a topic, but, anyway, back to MMOs.
Terra is another one coming out that,
That's not out yet?
Is it?
I don't know, because I remember Extrafer over on Horde House was trying it out, and that's the one that you can play with controller, right?
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Yeah, and
Shit, did that come out? Did I totally miss it?
You know, I honestly haven't... It hasn't been on my radar. It's kind of one of those ones that, you know, people was like, oh, it's cool, but eh. So, it might be out, it might not be... Honestly, I don't know.
Anyway, we're getting beyond the realm of what we intended to discuss tonight, which was basically, we love MMOs, we're excited about, you know, several of the new ones coming out. The things that excite us most about MMOs is when people are breaking sort of the predefined expectations of what MMOs can and should
do. Secret World, I'm actually super excited. I might have to go out and buy it.
Well, you know, I need to run over to Target.
True. So
wink.
We need to go to Target. So we're going to move on to our... Hey, kids, come in here. That was pretty good little whistle there.
So we're gonna do this real super quick. We've already gone on longer than we meant to. I say that every week. At this point, I think I just need to accept that we're chatty Cathys. But we really, this is so gregariously dreadful. I'm not trying to be a negative Nikolai here, but it's time to point out the worst gaming article, the worst excuse for games journalism that we've seen in the intervening 2 weeks since our last episode. Once again, Kotaku is the culprit.
It's from the Random Encounters, which still sounds like a Craigslist section.
It does, right?
Random Encounters.
I feel like it should be M4M.
Right.
And this article is called The Power and Danger of Big Numbers in RPGs.
Okay, RuPaul.
I'm sickening. So, this article basically... is just about why big numbers are bad in RPGs.
Yeah. An optional boss in Final Fantasy XII has 50,112,254 HP. And then, they talk about Disgaea, which, I mean, crazy stats is what Disgaea is all about.
Yeah, my problem here basically is that he's saying big numbers exist in JRPGs and RPGs in general, and that they get so large that they lose all meaning.
And that Cloud's sword is 40,000 feet long. Just kidding.
Yeah, they're using these data points, and okay. Yasmat's HP, which is 50,112,254. Okay, that's a lot. Although I disagree with his thesis in the first place, if you were going to complain about this, that's probably a logical talking point. But then he goes right into, oh, many games cap your character's levels at 99. The anime-inspired Disgaea series caps your character's levels at 9,999. As if that's a horrible thing. But, honestly, if you're playing Disgaea, you never need to get your levels over, like, 80. They're designed to be played however you want to play them. If you want to play them casual, as if they were Final Fantasy, you totally can. Going to 9,999 is a secondary thing for people like me that just want to have crazy huge numbers. So that would be like getting upset that Hulk chocolate syrup is green. Like, if you don't want the green chocolate syrup, don't buy the Hulk chocolate syrup. Because right. There exists normal chocolate syrup for you. Like, there are other RPGs that don't have character levels of 9,999. Disgaea exists to be the game that does have that.
And, you know, the thing is that if he had had a valid argument for why big numbers are bad, I might have been like, okay, well, that's valid, but I don't agree with it. But it's because when he was a kid, he really liked big numbers, and so when he was 13 or 14, he made a Suikoden inspired MUD, which, of course, in here he says a MUD is a rudimentary text-based take on an MMORPG. Okay.
Yeah, I
took issue with that.
I think it would be a little more accurate to describe a MUD as a precursor to that style of game. But I'm not going to argue that too much.
So he's like, so I was a nerdy little teenager who loved big numbers in games when I was a kid, so I made a MUD, and so I had no idea about effective game design, so I just put big numbers in, and my friends didn't like it, and that's why big numbers are bad.
And here, his pull quote, which I'm going to read for you, I believe he used this pull quote. I keep saying he. This was a dude, right? Okay, yes,
yeah,
it was.
Well, Jason Schreier.
His pull quote, I guess it's supposed to summarize his article overall, but to me it summarizes why it's almost antithetical to his point. The rush we get from seeing giant numbers on our screen doesn't happen because we're seeing giant numbers on our screen. What matters is what those numbers mean.
This sort of sounds like Sean Connery a bit.
A little. Like, what he's saying is true, except if you look at it contextually, the reason big-ass numbers have meaning to me is because, let's use the Yasmat optional boss in Final Fantasy XII as an example, since he brought it up. There's no way you're ever going to do 50 million damage in Final Fantasy XII without speccing your character right and growing and evolving and changing as a player and in your character build. Like, you're not going to achieve that. Being able to do that much damage is the hallmark that those large-ass numbers have meaning. It has the meaning that you progressed correctly to do this.
Yeah, you know, and I actually have to say that the way he wraps it up, like, it's weird because, I mean, and tell me if you think that there's a different interpretation of what his conclusion was, but it almost seems to go against his whole argument. He says that, you know, every number has a story. It's not a bad thing to let them enchant you, to let yourself be drawn in by the power of constantly increasing digits. There's nothing wrong with grinding for levels, watching your numbers and levels hike up massive mountains. There's nothing wrong with letting big numbers make you feel like you've accomplished something. That's what they're there for.
Yeah, I do. I feel like that's antithetical to his entire statement. Like, yes, those big numbers have a point. You literally, in your last paragraph, discuss what that point is, and I think they're effective at doing that.
Yeah, and you know something that's interesting, tying back into our MMO discussion, is that World of Warcraft has had a severe stat inflation, and they had actually talked about, you know, we want to do an item level squish so that your stats aren't crazy, and people were like, no.
And you know why that is, and I was one of those people. Again, I do get off on huge numbers. I love...
Oh, yeah! 35k crit!
Stop.
The reason he's telling me stop is because I was doing a masturbatory
animation. You're done. You're not doing that. Just don't do that.
And I just did it again.
Stop. So, my thing is, one of my most exciting things is when my mage is throwing crit after crit, and they're each doing more than 100,000 damage per crit, and I'm seeing these huge numbers rack up.
You're like, fuck yeah!
And yeah, I am, because seriously, I still remember...
Sorry?
I remember when I was critting for 60 damage. And now I feel like there's been such a huge growth in my character, and I feel like I've become this fucking world-ending, fucking amazing mage that is fighting the old gods and winning.
That's the thing, like, and the reason that their justification when they kind of really ramped it up, because at the end of Wrath of the Lich King expansion, you had about maybe, 20,000 to 30,000 health, and that's just a rough estimate. I mean, that would be in, like, top-end raid gear.
Yeah, yeah.
My Death Knight tank has over 200,000 hit points.
Yeah.
And I just... And the thing is that they said they wanted you to feel epic. I do feel fucking epic. I've killed Arthas. I've you know, saved the world. I mean, these are supposed to be epic characters, and big numbers make you feel epic, and there's nothing wrong with that.
And, you know, again, someone told me, oh, well, you'd still feel epic if the design encounter was designed the exact same, except you just removed one zero. You just moved the decimal place one spot to the left. And it's like, I understand that in theory, but in actuality, I'd be losing, you know, an entire degree of power, and certainly, like, that's fine from a design standpoint, but it's not fine from a standpoint of, oh, do you remember back when Ragnaros had, oh, I don't know, 500,000 health or whatever? What, I don't know, that's not a real number, but whatever it is. And you think, oh, wow, now I could do that in, like, four crits of my fireball or whatever.
I mean, you lose that by going back and doing old content, so, I mean, you feel that you've grown.
Yeah, and to me, that's the context, is that history gives context to these large numbers.
I somewhat wonder if that sort of feeling, that aspect of it, is what you're missing from Secret World.
Oh, well, that's definitely true. That is 100% true. But,
I mean, do they even have
other,
like,
aspects of Secret World make it okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I think the kind of the overall theme here...
Also, I want to point out more of these data points, because they make me laugh super hard.
Well, yeah, because you're Jason Schreier.
A boss in Disgaea 4 has 400,355,917 HP. Again, see my rant on Disgaea. The game exists to have creatures that have ridiculous numbers. Like,
and, you know, he even refers to all of these numbers as hilariously huge, but, like, he's saying that in a bad way. No, I think it's super funny that you can have a character level that's over 9,000 in Disgaea. Right. I think that's fucking rad, you know?
The recently released Growlancer 4 has 40 endings. First off, how is it a bad thing to have hell of endings? I thought that was desirable. Second, those 40, some of them are different by degrees because there's a dating sim aspect to that game. And the endings are just different based on who you romanced.
Every Suikoden endgame features at least 108 recruitable characters.
Yeah, that's because it's based on the fucking legend or story or whatever of the 108 Stars of Destiny. Like, there's a fucking point for there being 108 characters in Suikoden based on folklore and the stories and mythologies that game is drawing from.
Yeah, so our issue with this article is that, you know,
it's disrespectful to the meaning of what and purpose of all of these different numbers, characters.
I hate the way that Kotaku's like, oh, their Japanese role-playing games feed off of this obsession, pelting us with giant numbers like we're targets at a carnival game. It's like, it's just like a masturbatory journalism school reject writing, I'm sorry. You know?
Man, that became a little more like a Laltaku rant.
Yeah, so you know, like we said, we're not trying to be negative Nikolai here, but,
No, we're not. It's just, these guys are getting paid to do this. Like, there is someone who made money off of complaining about the number of endings in Growlancer. Is that not offensive to you? Do you not think that that person who is paid to bring you the news mightn't find something better to say or critique than that?
Yeah. Well, you know,
we're calling them out because that's the weapon we have.
And, you know, like we said, we don't want to exclusively bag on Kotaku, but they're the worst offenders.
They're the ones that are giving us the fuel. And I especially want to say, because I know we've bagged several times on Random Encounters. Random Encounters? I wish I had thought of that. I would effing love to do a podcast on just JRPGs. I love JRPGs. Huh. But it's horribly written. It's like they put their worst, like, B-list writers. It's like Random Encounters is...
like, I played a Suikoden game and I liked it, so I'm gonna write that column.
Random Encounters is to Kotaku as Deadpool is to Marvel Comics.
A joke.
Like, oh, this is where we put all of our Z-list writers so that they can cut their teeth on writing for us.
It doesn't matter that it's crap, because,
yeah, it's just JRPGs. Who gives a fuck? Well, I do, motherfucker.
That's offensive. So, anyways, you know, that's why we call it our
Party of the Week.
Get out of here, kids.
Those poor kids, man. They had to listen to...
Oh my god, are you still here?
Get out!
Get the fuck out! We need to go to Target! Okay, they're gone. Sorry, we didn't mean to raise our voices there, but sometimes those kids, man, you know, They're demanding, like, child labor laws and, you know, all that shit. Anyway, you know...
As always, it's been fun, but it's time to go to Target. So, we want to throw our shout-outs.
I might buy the secret mold there if they sell it.
Horde House, the last little Horde House in Azeroth.
The very last one, and all the other ones are gone.
Well, yeah, because who the hell wants to have sex with an orc?
I know way too many people that do, so never mind. I know someone who wants to have sex with a troll.
You know, they're a great WoW podcast. We love those guys dearly.
And also, Girls Gone WoW.
We have Girls Gone WoW. Of course, we've got our buddies over at the Nerdgasm, is it Network?
Yes, the Nerdgasm Network, and they are the video game podcast, which I think, I mean, you know, the Nerdgasm Network is kind of encompassing a lot of nerdery, but, I mean, I think that's kind of really the one that stands out to me, because I'm a fucking video game nerd.
You know, we also want to get Video Game Outsiders, we mentioned
them. Give them some props.
Yeah, defo.
Give them our snaps.
We talked about who they are a little bit last week. As I recall, and definitely want to pick up what they're laying down. And as always, Orange Lounge Radio.
10 years strong and...
10 years strong. I can only hope that we're still...
And they just they've been having a great run lately, too. You know, and they, you know, after 10 years, I mean, I can only hope that King Bowie's still around in 10 years.
Dude, in 10 years, I will be in prison for having murdered you.
Game Bowie will be, like, the free-to-play equivalent. We can only hope. We can hope not.
Yeah, right? We will be the Maple Story to their World of Warcraft.
No.
Of course, as always, like us on Facebook, send us emails. What are our email addresses?
Captain Spike is cpt.spike@gamebuoy.org.
cpt.spike@gamebuoy.org.
Mine is slagkick@gamebuoy.org.
Now you're just trying to bite my style. slagkick@gamebuoy.org.
We are on Facebook. Remember, we got our Facebook URL a couple episodes back. We are facebook.com/gamebuoy.
facebook.com/gamebuoy. And, of course, on fucking Twitter. Tweet us. We love Twitter.
We love tweets. And, you know, we want to be able to have a segment worthy of having tweets read. So
okay. Our energy levels have dropped so hard, it's time to go.
Yeah, so
stay out
Game
there,
Bowie
stay
podcast,
cool.
And fucking review us on iTunes, and we're going to Target.
Stay out there, have fun, stay cool, keep thinking, and we'll see you next time, Space Cowboy.
Let's get Taco Bell.